Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. We have been crazy busy over the last few months here at the show. We've been super excited to be producing a number of new series. And it, of course, takes up so much time, but it's so much fun. A couple of things that are happening. We've got some new episodes coming out. We're doing Uber Eats. We recorded it actually this week. We're doing Hilton Hotels for the Stay, that new campaign. We're also going to be talking with Ryanair. That's the Irish airline that does some really interesting work, particularly in social. I mean, they do a phenomenal job, and I'm excited to hear about that. Also, Amazon's Audible. Hendrix Gin, and the wonderfully controversial He Gets Us campaign here in the U.S. If you haven't seen this work, it's well worth seeing. I love it. You may remember the work from the Super Bowl. They did work the last couple of years. And the brand has been criticized for a number of things. And I think it's hard to say whether things are fair or not. But they anytime you take on a topic that is somewhat controversial, it becomes something that people are going to throw mud at. I love the campaign. I love the work. It's done by Lerma out of Dallas, Texas. It is about telling the story of Jesus through the lens of modern society. And it's not preachy. It's not religious in its message at all. I think it's quite brilliant. And we're going to be talking to the organization's CEO, who was previously the CMO at both Domino's Pizza and Wendy's restaurants here in the U.S. That episode comes out next week, so please do look for that. We also have a bunch of new series coming up, including our CFO-CMO series, sponsored by Analytic Partners, the leader in commercial analytics, where we bring together the CMOs and CFOs of major brands to discuss how the relationship best works and what each role needs from each other. The first episode will be Johnny Cahill, CMO of Heineken USA, alongside Heineken CFO Timothy Bodart. Look for that, I think, in mid to late April, the first episode. It's a three-episode series. We're also planning a CMO roundtable series sponsored by Tracksuit, the affordable brand tracking system for modern-day brands. It's going to be made up of group discussions, like panel discussions, between CMOs to talk about the challenges and opportunities of managing and growing brands in a modern marketing world. Really excited about that one. And one last mention goes to our upcoming Marketing Effectiveness Series, Volume 2, which is sponsored by Gale, the business agency. You may remember we produced a six-part series last year, and it was a massive success. This year is a follow-up to that, and we're going to explore some new angles on the topic and have some new folks be a part of that. So look for that to come up maybe towards the end of starting out probably towards the end of April or early May. If you'd like to learn more about sponsoring one of our series, we have a schedule that's coming up through the end of the year. You can download our sponsor kit on our homepage at onstrategyshowcase.com, or you can reach out to me directly at hello@onstrategyshowcase.com. Here's a clip from today's episode.
My last point on in-house and brand is the body has to be ready for the organ, and the organ has to be ready for the body, right? You can't just hire great creatives and go, okay, let's go. They're going to, it's just too foreign. You need to make sure you're bringing in great creatives who understand the business and the process. And likewise, the business has to understand they're bringing in creative beings, and those beings are different, behave different, create differently. So that is the interesting thing. And that's the thing that I think we've done so well at Yeti.
That's Paulie Derry, CMO of Yeti in Austin, Texas. Prior to Yeti, Paulie ran the internal creative agency at Uber. He's got a really interesting background. Yeti was started in 2006 by two brothers, Roy and Ryan. It's about building products that help you get out into the wild and keep you there longer. It builds coolers and drinkware for the serious outdoor enthusiast. As they say, it's gear built for the wild. But Yeti's wild is not the wild of extreme sports and Red Bull. It's a more quiet, reflective wild, an almost spiritual wild. Here's a clip from an interview with the brothers and their dad.
When Ryan was still wearing diapers, we'd have a thunderstorm. He would wake up, go look out the window before daybreak. When he was able to get outside, he'd take a little red wagon and a little net and go out in the ditches and scoop up crawfish out of the ditches. There's just something in his blood that makes him want to hunt. If he was born 500 years ago in Texas and you had to survive, he could still survive. You know, there's something about that.
I know those Comanches might get me. Well, hunting and fishing was our passion. I think some people would think we're over the top, but you have to have that passion first, and then you might stumble into something. We were into the outdoors, we were into the gear, and that's what eventually got us to Yeti. Boy had always said that ideas are like commodities, and they really are, unless you're hanging around someone like Roger or Roy who can bring them to life in front of you or take them to market.
It was really the boat business that brought me to the cooler business. Cool. Everything about the boats I was putting together was high-end and durable and for fishing the Texas Gulf Coast the way we like to fish, except ordinary coolers. They weren't really matching the quality of the rest of the boat. And if you look back, everything led to the cooler business.
You can see all of the Yeti work and many of their incredible cinematic short films on our website. Do please check them out. Here's Paulie Derry, CMO of Yeti in Austin, Texas. Enjoy. Ad Age's 2024 In-House Agency of the Year is a Yeti, and I'm thrilled to have Paulie here with us today. Paulie Derry, just by the sound of his name alone, Paulie, he has to be a fun guy. So, and then when I heard your, as I just said, when I heard his accent, I'm like, he is a fun guy. Welcome, Paulie.
Thank you, Fergus. I have to be a fun guy or maybe a mobster. I think the word Paulie in America, I think, is most associated with mobsters. And I think people are a bit let down when they meet me.
That is a great point. I never thought of that. It's like Paulie from The Sopranos. You don't want to meet Paulie in a dark alley.
That's right.
So it's great to have you on. I know that you came out of executive creative director roles at RGA, then you went to Uber, and now you're at Yeti. I just want to spend a minute or two on that journey. Why did you go from agency to client side, and what's been so special about that experience?
Yeah, good place to start. Obviously, I loved my what I'd call upbringing and life in advertising. Like what a fun, interesting life to live especially as a kid out of college and all that good stuff. And then, you know, RGA during almost a decade, which was a phenomenal time. Then I got a call from Uber that said, "Hey, we're this young startup. We're looking to kind of do some marketing, ad marketing, and get some internal offerings." At that stage, I was really happy with RGA and I was pretty busy. And I said, look, call me back in a year or two. And to their credit, they did. And I took the role. And what I think was interesting to me was, could I have real impact on a business? And I think agencies, you have impact in different ways. But when you are brand side, you can really steer the ship with great momentum if things are going well and you can find your spot there. And that's what drew me, not just to Uber, but then to Yeti and then kind of staying brand side. You really have a lot of impact and sway on the business. And that's what I loved. Uber was an interesting time. My 7-month pregnant wife and I, we drove cross country. And as we were driving, Delete Uber happened, which was kind of an interesting time during Uber's existence, and kind of changed the role. I joined thinking we were going to be on the offensive to then kind of being on the defense. But it was interesting because it did force Uber to think about what is brand. And they hadn't really thought of it that way. Tech company, product heavy, engineer focused, hadn't had that brand side as part of their psyche. And often in those valley startups, marketing's the last seat at the table. So it was, while not great what was going on in the business, it did allow us to do things that I don't think we would have been allowed to do if everything was just hunky-dory. So the chance to build a brand at Uber, we brought in new management, and we got it, I think, the ship pretty right for its IPO. And now I think the business is actually on a much better track. So fascinating time. That's a whole other story I won't bore you with. But impact, I think, Fergus, is the key question. Can you have more impact? And the truth is, I think Yeti's the perfect example of this. You absolutely can. You can. You don't go to bed at night. You know, as a creative, you go to bed at night going, I hope the deck's okay. There's three ideas. One's a safe one. One's a crazy one. One's the one they're probably going to pick. And you kind of go to bed with that feeling in your stomach that, man, I hope their CMO likes the work. You know, when you're brand side, you go to bed with a different pit in your stomach. It's, well, I've told everyone this is the way we're going. So I hope it's going to work, because it's kind of all on me. But that's a great feeling, because you are in control of the direction, as opposed to just being here's three varieties and we'll go make that for you.
To what degree would you describe yourself as being a blend of strategic thinker and creative thinker? Because a creative person in a CMO role is not typical.
Yeah, it's not. And I credit our CEO here at Yeti a lot for taking that plunge. And I think the way he saw it was, well, a lot of great marketing is good taste and good work. And if you can bring someone in to help him with that, he's got a great business around him that he knew he could control the rest. And I think that's held really true. The other part of that is, Fergus, you know, the higher up you get in the agency world, you really become a strategic partner to your client, right? As opposed to just a creative voice. And I think those years at IGA kind of prepared me for that, to be a partner to the business. And I think that's the biggest transition, going from agency to brand side. You got to add business acumen to your remit and really understand what are the pressures of the business and how can creativity solve that. And once you kind of prove that a little, people don't care what your background is. They just want you in the room.
I suppose RGA was really more about people who were systems thinkers, right? So that sort of prepares you in a little bit of a better way for a client-side role, right?
Yeah, I think what RGA prepared you for was you really were a consultant in the best form of the word, right? At that stage, people were bringing RGA in because they'd heard that if they didn't digitize their business, they were going to be dead. And a lot of people didn't know what that meant. So you bring RGA in to really help rethink the business. So it wasn't just, hey, here's the brief. What's the 30-second spot? At RGA, you were really trying to think about the whole business. And that held you in great footing as I went to brand side. So it is a weird transition, I think, coming up a creative, but I think the more time, you know, you are a creative, the more you are a strategic thinker. And then if you can add some acumen to that, if you can understand how a brand works, how the business works, you then end up just becoming a pure marketer and a thinker.
My understanding is, when you went to Uber, were you starting an in-house group, or was it already in existence, but you were sort of reorienting it?
Yeah, it wasn't an agency, I would say. It was doing a lot of the in-house, you know, the tougher work. Uber was in a gazillion countries, everything needed, you know, localization, internal stuff. It was a large organization, but it wasn't an agency making its own TV, for example, and so on.
Because it wasn't focused on brand at that time.
It wasn't.
Yeah, we're doing a recording this week with Uber Eats, so we're going to be having that conversation about the Uber of the past and the present.
Well, and the Uber Eats is a great story and a great example of how creativity can lead a business to better days. And I think that's exactly the story there. But yeah, so set up, you know, more offerings, I would say, in the in-house business, and really tried to bring that agency ethos into the in-house. My last point on in-house and brand is, the body has to be ready for the organ and the organ has to be ready for the body, right? You can't just hire great creatives and go, okay, let's go. They're going to it's just too foreign. You need to make sure you're bringing in great creatives who understand the business and the process. And likewise, the business has to understand they're bringing in creative beings, and those beings are different, behave different, create differently. So that is the interesting thing, and that's the thing that I think we've done so well at Yeti. Yeti was absolutely ready for creative thinking to bring the brand to life to what was already an incredibly strong brand. And then the creatives we brought in understood the brand and understood the process, or at least were willing to learn it. So the body didn't reject the organ and vice versa. So I think that's where you see some undoings, where you just bring in a great creative, you know, or creatives that struggle to work within this new system. So that's kind of the trick to it, I would say.
So when you go to Yeti, which was roughly, I think, 5 years ago, coming up on a little bit under 5 years ago, I believe.
Right.
Were they doing all of their work in-house, or was that your remit to sort of build it out?
It's a similar story. Yeti's always done great films, long-form films, and that was done primarily in-house, working with some production companies or ambassadors we really trusted. But kind of same story, you know, we weren't quite at the stage where we were doing all of our TV ads and all of our comms internally. There, you know, there had been some agencies that had done a big chunk of it. So the hope was to bring it all in-house, you know, about 5 years ago. Now, today, that's exactly what we are. We do everything from our magazines to our banner ads to our films to our TV ads. Anything and everything you can imagine comes from our four walls, pretty much. So it's a full in-house operation now.
So for those who aren't familiar, you've got to go check out all of these Yeti films. They're all available. Most of them are available on YouTube. Correct. I got to tell you, Paulie, I was watching many of them over the weekend. I mean, it's like watching this engrossing documentary series. It's hard to take hard to take my eyes off of it. Beautifully filmed, beautifully crafted, phenomenal storytelling, rich in every way. Where does that level of taste come from?
I mean, hire great people, I think, or hire great people who make a decision on what gets approved. And Yeti's always had a high taste level, I think, on that, predating me. But what I would say about those films, and this is what I love, is a couple of things. Look, how do I justify keep making these things? I'm very lucky. I can't prove a financial return on these films. They're not built for ROI, so to speak, but they are built because we love telling these stories of people that live in our world and what we call the wild. And I think that's important. You need to understand the world in which Yeti exists and why we love it so much. And that's what these stories are trying to bring to people who don't get to experience that every day. Look, and there's not really a Yeti product in these films. If it is, it's being used correctly. It's not fortuitously.
It might be sitting on a boat, but it's not in the foreground. It's in the background.
Yeah, that's right. And it's because, look, you can't treat customers like idiots, you know, like that. You understand, if you watch this film, you go, well, then that must be what their products are built for. Right? That environment. And that's exactly right. But we don't need to say it or be heavy-handed with it.
And let's for the listener, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Paulie, but for the listener who hasn't seen them, let's talk about the atmosphere that most of these films are shot in. It's really about outdoor adventure and the role and that lifestyle, that passion is what we're talking about here with most of the films. The people living their lives in that passion for the outdoors and adventure, right?
Yeah, it's spot on. You know, we always talk about it's the people and places that make up, you know, the Yeti universe, the wild that haven't been uncovered, you know. And what I love about that is, look, they're not made to change your mind about anything. I'm probably never going to go into a murky river and tickle a fish. I'm probably not going to chase a tornado after watching the film, but hopefully after watching the film, my mind's open a little bit to this strange world that I haven't seen before, or I have some empathy or understanding for this world. And that's what what we love, what I love about these films is that they're just meant to give you a peek into this world. And yes, it's a world that Yeti exists and is core to, but also for anyone watching to understand that's the products are built for that world, but this is the world that exists because, you know, I'll let you in a little secret. We didn't create the first cooler. We didn't create the first, you know, cup. But I think what we did create was create a brand that people could really understand what the products were built for and the world that they were meant to exist. And people have bought into that, and that's the strength of those films.
So it's not unlike what Nike has done in its world of creating the world of athletes. We're not all athletes, but we admire that, we aspire to that, we want an aspect of that to be a reflection of us. So when you guys focus on serious sort of outdoor enthusiasts and that sort of intense leading edge of that world, is it much the same way that you're trying to sort of strike a tone or represent the voice? Like Nike will say, it's the voice of the athletes, not of the fan. Do you guys have some sort of a yin and yang sense of what your voice is?
Yeah, I think what's key with our voice, Fergus, is to never waver. But we call it tip of the spear, right? And we build products for the tip of the spear outdoors minded people. And a lot of them, you know, we think about our ambassadors. We have about 200 of the best of the best ambassadors. They're not household names like Nike. You know, we don't have LeBrons of the world, but we have the people who are very impactful in their pursuits. And we build products for those people so that it can withstand their rigors. And then I would say we advertise at that end of town too. So our imagery is always very tip of the spear and showing it at the absolute peak of its performance. Now, that doesn't mean we don't, again, this goes back to you can't treat your customers like fools, right? Now, we place our advertising in, you know, in mass places for people to consume, but the person sitting with a Yeti on their desk in New York City who sees our ad gets it, right? It's not, we don't have to place Yeti in New York City.
Absolutely.
For them to understand it. And that's where I think, you know, some brands can go wrong. You're trying to chase the customer when really the customer wants to come join you and follow in. And that's where our tone comes from. By staying true to the core and the tip of the spear, people like having a dabble and dip into our world. And that's, I think, the allure and the attraction of the brand. Look, that, you know, I joke, but a lot of our products do end up on desks at the office. A lot of our products end up at the sideline of the kids' soccer game on the weekend. We're not going to advertise that, but the fact that consumer has made the jump to understand that the product can work there, even though it's not purely built for that, is wonderful. And I, you know, I'm never going to show a Honda Odyssey on the sideline of a kid's sporting event, and nor do I have to. And I think that's the beauty of understanding your brand and understanding your customers' basic human interests.
So what would you say is the idea at the core of the Yeti brand?
I mean, that's an existential question. I think for me, it's building products that are absolutely built for the tip of the spear, unwavered quality to survive all sorts of elements in the wild and never let you down. And then I think our communication piece is to just shed light on that world. And that's it. Because we call it our depth and breadth strategy. And what we mean by that is we go really deep in what we call our core communities. So if you think Yeti started on the coasts of Texas in fish, and we built a cooler that allowed us to fish longer because they weren't very, very good at holding ice back then. And, you know, most people stand on their coolers to cast and the lid would break and so on. So, you know, Roy and Ryan, our founders, just built a great cooler for the fishing community. What happened then was other communities kind of took the product and were like, hey, this would be great for us. So the ranching community, for example, the barbecue community, the culinary community, and then it just kept finding new communities, you know, backcountry, you know, we're now on the coast with surf and skate and so on. What I would say to that is we didn't go find those communities. They found us. and the product had great relevance there. When we see the product has great relevance, we then go very deep with that community. We want to support it. We want to be part of it. That takes an enormous amount of time and commitment, but that's time and commitment we're absolutely going to give those communities to do it. Once we're deep in a community, we will tell stories about that community respectfully. What we found is the community lets us in, gives us great access, respects us, trusts us, and those stories reach a wider audience, and that kind of draws more people in into the system. So I think for us, it's building a product that's built for these pursuits and then telling stories that represent the people of those pursuits in the most authentic way possible.
We'll be right back.
Hi there, my name's James Herman, and I'm what's known as a distinctive asset, which is something that makes people think immediately of a certain brand, like the Golden Arches make people think of McDonald's, or the Swoosh makes people think of Nike. When the most effective marketing and advertising people hear me, they think of the Master of Advertising Effectiveness brand. The Master of Advertising Effectiveness is a 6-week online program in partnership with WARC, where I'll give you a next level understanding of how to make advertising that creates consistently better commercial results. One important ingredient is distinctive assets, like me. And me being here on this ad is one of the many reasons this campaign is
the most effective advertising campaign in the world.
Confused? You won't be when you become a Master of Advertising Effectiveness. Get started at mae.academy. That's mae.academy.
Now back to the show. So when you look at brands, because, you know, people that are listening will be familiar with many of these brands like Coleman and Igloo and Ice Mule, a little smaller. How were those brands strategically deploying? And were they dealing with a completely different target audience, do you feel? I mean, many of them are years older, of course, but how do you look at them?
Yeah. I mean, Coleman's been around a very, very long time. You know, without sounding arrogant, I don't mean it to be, we don't really look at other players in our space. I just don't think there's a premium product out there that competes with us. So, and they don't really, you know, no one runs our playbook of going deep in these communities and investing in these communities and then, you know, telling, you know, wonderful stories about them. So we're not overly concerned with them. You know, we worry about our products. We worry about our people. We worry about our communications, and the rest will take care of itself. So that's how we approach the landscape.
So this is a quote from you. You said that a Yeti is at home in the Hamptons as it is on a duck hunt.
Yeah.
Which led me to think of other brands that I hugely admire. One would be Carhartt. The other one would be Timberland. These are brands that have managed to find a place in popular culture as well as in these subcultures of enthusiasts within their original place. Is that how you think about Yeti? It has that ability to cross cultures?
Yeah, it's spot on, and it's not forced. The other thing I would say is the brands you reference, Carhartt, for example, great product, right? Great quality product. And I think that's one thing that does unite this country. Building things the right way that don't let you down endears yourself to a broad-ranging audience, because you're making a promise with them that our products won't break the promise. That, I think, you know, again, the audience is smart. You've got to respect what they respect. What I mean by the Hamptons and the duck hunt comment is our products are built for the duck blind to live in that environment, and that's our community. But the product works so well for the people, you know, the Hamptons or wherever, that they respect it. The fact that we don't pander to people who aren't in our core communities doesn't affect us, because they respect what it's been built for, what it can do, how we, I think, respectfully tell stories about our people, and people come together over quality. And I think that's what you see the most with brands that kind of jump into different realms. They don't compromise their quality. And they don't chase trends is the other big one, I would say, Fergus. You know, it's easy today to make short-term decisions for short-term gains. I'm sure, and I say this a lot, a big part of my job as CMO at Yeti is actually, how do I sometimes slow it down? You know,
yeah.
We don't want to grow too fast or jump a shark or chase a trend for a quick win. We are building for 200 years, not for the next two. And I think brands that go about building it that way gain respect in larger audiences. So it's important not to chase fads or trends for short-term gain. Every decision you make's got to be for the long term. Again, I think people respect that.
So let's talk about that in the context of the last couple of years. So never has a cup become such a common part of everyday homes. I mean, in our home, we have probably 15 of them that my teenage daughters have gathered over the last maybe 18 months. And the recent example now is the Stanley Cup, the drinking cup, the drinkware sure. cup. That's become a phenomenon on TikTok and elsewhere. Is this what you're talking about? I mean, you guys are in that drinkware space, but you're not chasing the TikTok generation. You're in essence taking your message into that channel, but you're not pandering to it in order to get in that basket, right?
That's a perfect summary. I would say what's happened with Stanley is, I think, been great for the category. I think it's brought a lot of people to the category, and certainly our drinkware business is enjoying that as well. You know, I think the thing there is, it'll be interesting to see where your teenage daughters will be in a few years. Would they have moved on?
Or a few weeks.
Yeah, correct. You know, the thing you worry about with those fads is, can you sustain it, right? And that's what, you know, certainly the leader of a brand or the leader of a business needs to worry about. Like, we need to be sustaining our growth for a long, long time and not be, held ransom by TikTok influencers, right? We would never give our brand over to someone else in the hope that they would look after us.
Tell me about that, because I've had conversations with the client-side marketers in the last couple of weeks where that exact point has come up. It's the degree to which you need to hand over full control of your brand when you're dealing with influencers who can have such a massive impact on your business. I mean, some will say you have to be in charge of your brand pillars, but you can allow it to be interpreted. And others who say they want to be rigid to their brand and how it's executed. Where do you guys fall out? Because you guys are, as you said earlier, you have ambassadors, but they're of the category, not outside of it.
Yeah, I think our ambassadors, I always say that, you know, you've got influencers and then you've got our ambassadors, which they're uninfluencable. You can't actually influence them. they were Yeti fans well before we ever shook hands. And that's something we look for, to be honest. You know, to sign it up as a Yeti ambassador, it's about a two-year courting, I would say, on both parties to make sure they use the product, they use it appropriately, they're respected in their communities. So it's a very different relationship, and we are part of the family then, really, which is very different to a, you know, what I would call some of the people that you are hiring on some of the social platforms. You know, are they true brand evangelists? Is it at their core what they believe in? And when another check comes along in the next few weeks, will they move on from you and just take the next offering? That's what I would be worried about, not just in our world, but any world, in dealing with that way of working. You know, we have people that are with us to the end, and that's the relationship that we want with our people. And that's why we feel really good about how our brand is built to sustain. And I think because we build it the right way, we are somewhat fad resistant. We've seen many fads come and go. By being true to who we are, not chasing the next sensation. We have grown appropriately and continue to. And that's what I'm focused on. Handing yourself over to someone that you are not entirely all in on or all in on for eternity would worry me. And we'll see it play out.
So I watched a video this morning from 2006, which was the Grizzly viral video. So just for the listener to understand. So in 2006, it's kind of not dissimilar to the Dollar Shave Club video. It has one of the founders in a warehouse of Yeti coolers. And he's in essence talking about durability. We'll show this on our website. I may be able to draw some of it in. But in essence, if I'm remembering this right, it is a 20-minute video of a grizzly bear trying to open a Yeti cooler and failing on how he's doing this. So underscoring that initial sort of edge of durability, that was a pretty powerful way to start and certainly indicates to me that you've got founders that were absolute believers in marketing from the very beginning.
Yeah. Look, yeah, a couple of things fact there. I always joke that bear sold more coolers than any marketer at Yeti ever will. But what I love about that was there was kind of this folklore when Yeti started that these things were really tough and you know, people had heard it had survived bear attacks.
Interesting. That's great.
Yeah. And you know, to you and I, that is impressive. I'm not going to run into a bear, I don't think that often for it to be a problem. But if I'm in the backcountry for 20 days living out of a cooler, that's a real problem for me. Just us demonstrating the power of the quality of our product has been a cornerstone of Yeti marketing from day one. And that's the beauty of working with the best product. I always say, like, always go to work for the best product you can. You know, marketing is hard enough. Don't try and do it for an inferior product. And that's what we have at Yeti. So we call it feats of strength. Always show off the feats of strength of the product, because that's the best form of marketing you can do. And we try and come up with fun and interesting ways to show the feats of strength of our product. But back to Roy and Ryan being marketers, our founders, absolutely very savvy about it. They knew that they wanted to create a phenomenal product because they loved fishing and they wanted a product that lived up to their expectations. But understanding that showcasing what these things could do was a great form of marketing, was a great start for the business. Even the word Yeti, you know, when I often ask Roy, how'd you get there? He liked it was easy to say, it was four letters and it looked good in a logo. You know, that's someone who... That's someone who understands simplicity and marketing and you know, the design of our products is simple and effective, just like that. So I would say understanding your consumer and simplicity of message have always been, you know, strong at Yeti and should be strong at any great brand. You know, the other thing, we have an amazing team in our marketing team called the community. And they're kind of the ambassador liaisons. They're the liaisons with the core communities. They're on the road every day, out and about. And they're in every creative review. And it's great, you know, because they're often harsh if something looks too addy, if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't smell right, if product isn't being used correctly. And they're kind of these brand guardians that keep all of our comms in check, and that kind of filters through. The creatives learn off that, understand the tone. So we kind of, it's a bit back to what I said earlier, you never falter, you never chase, you never pander, you never hand it over to someone you don't trust. And that's what I think builds great brands.
This brand started in 2006. It started out in coolers, hard and soft side coolers. When was, or can you think of, are you aware of, a big milestone where shit just took off? What happened that made that? Because it wasn't advertising that did that, I assume. That something had happened. What was that?
Yeah, I think the product got into more people's hands, kind of. You know,
like what different distribution?
What I really respect about Roy and Ryan was. For 7 years, they sold the cooler, right? And they drove from store to store to town, building relationships, finding the right stores to be in. You know, we are not in every store because, you know, we're not super easy to find if you're just walking down the local main street. But that's because we want to be in the right place. And that's still true today. We are not in some of the big box retailers you would expect us to be. That is absolutely by design. We want to make sure we're with the right people. And that is interesting. That's an interesting look at controlled growth to make sure, again, we're not, you know, people always ask, what do you, you know, what keeps you up at night? And what keeps me up at night is, did we grow too fast? Did I pop it? Did I chase stuff? Got the quick win, but I popped the magic, right? And vice versa, do I wake up and go, damn, I missed it. We were just too slow to react. And it's that balance that really, I guess, keeps me up. But back to your story on what changed, long way of me of saying, by building it right on the ground for 7 years with Roy and Ryan, it obviously then caught on, multiple communities picked up the product, and it just had this groundswell of momentum. That time and commitment, again, you don't often get afforded, right? Think about how startups roll today. Grow at all costs, prove that you can grow at all costs, we'll sort the rest out. That's the complete opposite to the Yeti story, right? It was build through partnerships, through building communities, through, you know, slowly moving at each junction. So that's how it grew. And that's why we've had such sustained growth. When I joined 5 years ago, we were still pretty heavy Southeast America, you know, Florida, Texas. You look at us now, look at how we've worked our way to the rest of the country and the coasts. And we've done it, what I would like to think, organically, communities opening us up, opening up regions for us. You know, I look at the surf community, a very insular, tight-knit community that, you know, love us because our products work so well and represented them so well. It's that type of growth that has spawned, I guess, great financial growth for the business. But it's been done so thoughtfully that it again, it goes back to my popping of the bubble, right? That is what keeps us up at night. So we've been quite restrained. And now we're looking overseas. You know, we've got a phenomenal business in Australia that is incredible. And we're now entering Europe. You know, we've got the UK opening doors and Germany. And I'm excited by that, you know, because we're doing it the Yeti way, which is, you know, building ambassadors in the region, finding the right partners to get going with.
Coleman, Ice Mule, Igloo, they all see this happening. Are you noticing that others, because it's an easy space to push into. It's not that you're going to be able to do it well, but it's easy to sort of say, okay, let's take Coleman out of the camping environment and put it in the surf environment. It's almost like you're reverse engineering your brand. Have you noticed that anybody is now beginning to act like Yeti in order to steal some share, maybe with a lower price cooler?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's flattering. The thing I'll say is think about doing it like Yeti. If you think doing it like Yeti is shooting a photo of a cooler on a beach with a surfer and you think you've done
perfect, great answer. Up,
yeah. I've nailed it, then, boy, you couldn't be further from what it means to do it the Yeti way. Because I'll give you a good example. Let's look at surf. We have been working with the surf community for, I would say, 10 years. We only just became an official partner of the World Surf League last year, right? And that is because that community is very suspicious of brands, right? The fact that we were willing to take the time to build relationships, to prove ourselves to that community, to support the foundations and things that they were so passionate about, to prove that we weren't going to represent them in a bad way, took us a decade. You know, today, I think we are very strong in the surf community. We've got phenomenal surf ambassadors from John Florence and Steph Gilmore to the Malloy brothers, who were, you know, big wave surfers and more of the adventurous surfers. We have built that community. And even I would say, you know, relationships that are incredibly hard to build, but the North Shore lifeguards out in Hawaii, you know, they're family to us. If you think being a brand and winning them over is easy, then you are most severely incorrect.
You bring up a good point, which is, and this is my friend Ed Cotton suggested this is a question for you, which was, how do you know when you're stretching the brand too far? Because it's an extension of what you're talking about, which is not only when you go into a new category do you hope to build the brand, but you could also dilute it, or you could be exposing yourself to a whole new competitive field that may or may not work in your favor. So how do you guys think about growth? Because you have a reasonably limited selection of products, which compared to others, you might go, God, you guys could go a lot further, but you're very deliberate, as you've said. So what are those sort of conversations about, well, why don't we get into X, Y, or Z?
You ask any market research or any group, you know, team, what could Yeti get into? The answer is everything.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Putting a Yeti logo on that, whoa, that would sell so much. You know, people would love that. So we deal with that all day. I think what we love is, and I always say this, while I look after the brand team, there's 1,000 Yeti employees and that's 1,000 brand managers. The minute you do something a little off, the door in my office has a line out the front. The community team keep us in check. The ambassadors keep us in check. My boss, my CEO keeps me in check. He's the first one to say, hey, is this right? Does this feel like us? You know, so it's total buy-in from everybody not to chase, right? To stay true to who we are and work our way into things. And that's very hard to teach. It's very hard to put in a brand manifesto. It really has to be felt. So the way we look at it is, does it belong in the Yeti ecosystem right now? And if it doesn't fit in that, what we think of when we say the word Yeti ecosystem, then it's not right. And the other thing is, you have to build your way into different categories, right? You can't just jump into a, I can think if Yeti came out with a, you know, a giant oven, I think, you know, or a stovetop, I think people would be like, that's odd, right?
Yeah.
You know, we came out with a cast iron skillet that's meant to be used over fire. I think people go, hey, that makes a ton of sense, right? So you have to work your way into these categories and not just jump into the end result. And again, that takes time and you need a lot of faith to build it that way.
It is Paulie Derry, Chief Marketing Officer at Yeti down in Austin, Texas. Thank you, man, for your time. This has been a real pleasure.
My pleasure. And I hope you can find something in there.
Not at all, dude. It was great. And we will see everybody on the next episode.